The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Dr. Scott Youngkin for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Health Issues. For the next half hour, I'm going to be reading articles from the Mayo Clinic Health Letter and from the Harvard Health Letter. And the first thing I'm going to read is from the Mayo Clinic Health Letter of June 2022, and it's entitled Gambling Disorder. Detection, treatment, important against this bad bet. You probably know that people with common addictions like alcohol or drug misuse disorders may lie about their substance use, put their relationships at risk to keep using, or use substances as a stress reliever. But these behaviors are also common for people with gambling disorders. More and more often, problem gambling occurs not in a casino or horse track, but privately on an electronic device with an internet connection. This became especially true during the COVID-19 pandemic, when many public gathering places closed or limited access, leaving people to navigate isolation and loneliness at home. At the same time, the ability to bet on sports from home became more widely available. More than a third of Americans can legally bet on sports. Gambling stimulates the brain's reward system, much like drugs or alcohol can, which can lead to addiction. Compulsive gambling, also called gambling disorder, is the uncontrollable urge to keep gambling despite its toll. People with compulsive gambling may continually chase bets that lead to losses, hide their behaviors, deplete their savings, accumulate debt, or even resort to theft or fraud to support their gambling addiction. Gambling disorder is more likely to occur in younger people and in men. But increased online gambling opportunities and the rise in loneliness can put older adults at increased risk. Other factors that increase risk include access. If you live within 50 miles of a gambling facility like a casino, this dramatically increases the risk of a gambling disorder. Another issue is mental health problems. People with substance abuse problems, personality disorders, depression, and anxiety are more prone to gambling disorder. Another consideration is certain medications. Dopamine agonists like pramipexol are used to treat Parkinson's disease and restless leg syndrome. They have a rare side effect of increasing compulsive behavior, for example, gambling. Then there are certain personality characteristics. People who are highly competitive, prone to working a lot, impulsive, restless, or easily bored have an increased risk of gambling disorder. Is it important? Is it a problem? It's important to understand the difference between entertainment betting with friends and problematic behavior. Some studies have found that low-risk casual gambling in older adults provides some social and cognitive benefits. According to the American Psychiatric Association, people who've experienced four of the following indicators in the last year may have a gambling disorder. And those indicators are needing to gamble with increasing amounts to achieve excitement, feeling restless or irritable when trying to cut down or stop gambling, repeatedly trying and failing to control, cut back on, or stop gambling, thinking frequently about gambling, even when not actively doing it, using gambling for stress relief, chasing losses, returning to get even after losing money gambling, lying to hide gambling activity, risking or losing a close relationship, a job, a school, or a job opportunity because of gambling. Relying on others to help with money problems caused by gambling. What can you do? As with most people with addictions, those with a gambling disorder will often be the last to realize they have a problem. But seeking treatment can help you regain a sense of control. Some approaches include behavior therapy or cognitive behavioral therapy. Behavior therapy uses systematic exposure to the behavior you want to unlearn and teaches you skills to reduce the urge to gamble. Cognitive behavioral therapy focuses on identifying unhealthy, irrational, and negative beliefs and replacing them with healthy, positive ones. Then there are medications. No drug has been specifically approved to treat gambling disorder, but some antidepressants may be effective in reducing gambling behavior. Medications called narcotic antagonists, used successfully in treating substance use disorder, may help to treat compulsive gambling. Then there are support groups. Ask your healthcare provider for recommendations on self-help groups like Gamblers Anonymous and other resources. You may also connect informally and share resources with others on community chat boards like the Mayo Clinic Connect at www.connect.mayoclinic.org. In addition, treatment for substance use, depression, anxiety, or any other mental health disorder may be part of a treatment plan for gambling disorder. Now we're going to review a section in the Mayo Clinic Health Letter of June 2022 called Second Opinion. Question. I've seen reports on the news about bad air quality in my area due to wildfires, but we're not near any fires. Should I be worried? Answer. You're right to take notice of potentially dangerous air quality. Wildfires can pose serious risks to your life, to your health and property. Even if your region doesn't have wildfires, strong winds can blow unsafe air particles from fires burning hundreds of miles away. This is especially true with plastic-based materials that burn when homes in the path of the fire go up in flames. Wildfire smoke contains respiratory irritants, including hydrocarbons and other organic chemicals. The greatest health risk is from ultra-fine particles that can be inhaled into the lungs. These particles cause nasal congestion and stinging and burning eyes. They also aggravate the respiratory system, causing coughing, wheezing, trouble breathing, and chest pain. For some people, these symptoms can be severe. People most at risk of serious health complications include older adults, children, pregnant women, those with heart disease, and those with chronic lung disease like asthma and COPD, or chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. Avoid going outside for prolonged periods and exercising outside when air quality is poor. Stay inside, keep your windows and doors closed and the air conditioner on. Run an air purifier, ideally one with a high-energy particulate air filter. Wear a standard paper dust mask, which probably is better than nothing, but really does not fully protect the respiratory tract from most particulate matter. Particulate masks, like those labeled N95, can offer slightly better protection when worn properly. To learn where fires are currently burning in the U.S., visit http://fire.gov/. fire@airnow.gov. That's fire, F-I-R-E, dot airnow, A-I-R-N-O-W, dot G-O-V. To check the current air quality values in your community, visit airnow.gov and type in your zip code. Weather apps on smartphones often have information on air quality and can advise you about pollutants in the air before you head outside. Question. I recently started taking an antidepressant, and now I'm grinding my teeth while I sleep. Could the two be connected? Answer. There may be a connection. Research shows that certain antidepressants can trigger teeth grinding as an uncommon but bothersome side effect. Teeth grinding is also called bruxism. Bruxism, which can happen at night or during the day, is often accompanied by jaw clenching. The condition affects 8% of people at any given time and is more common when you have stress, anger, frustration, and anxiety. If bruxism is new to you, a sleep partner may be the first to notice, as it sounds like two craggy rocks being rubbed together. If you live alone, you may suspect bruxism if you develop morning headaches and jaw pain. Two common classes of antidepressants, SSRIs, or selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, and SNRIs, or norepinephrine reuptake inhibitors, are more likely to cause bruxism. Drugs that have this side effect include Celexa, Prestique, Cymbalta, Prozac, Paxil, Zoloft, and Effexor. These drugs impact neurotransmitter activity by affecting dopamine pathways and serotonin levels, which may lead to movement disorders like bruxism. In addition to damaging your teeth, bruxism is linked to a lower quality of sleep that can affect your focus, your energy, and mood. If you are newly grinding your teeth and you recently started taking antidepressant, consult your care provider. To see if side effects improve, your provider may recommend reducing your antidepressant dosage. Stress management, including mindfulness and meditation, may lessen or resolve bruxism. A trip to your dentist may also be in order, because the dentist can mold a protective guard for you to wear at night to prevent tooth damage. If none of these options work, changing antidepressants may help. Or a prescription may be added for the anti-anxiety medicine Buspirone, or Buspar, which rebalances dopamine levels. Another option is Botox injections into the jaw muscles to temporarily relieve grinding and clenching. Don't reduce your medication dose or stop taking your antidepressant without first speaking to your care provider. Now we're going to go on to the Harvard Health Letter. Again, this is the June 2022 issue of the Harvard Health Letter. And the first article is What You Need to Know About Aphasia. The language disorder stems from various types of brain damage. When the family of Bruce Willis shared in March of 2022 that the actor was ending his career due to aphasia, a language disorder, fans expressed sadness and respect. Here was a blockbuster film hero showing real-life courage in revealing his illness. The news also sparked worldwide interest in aphasia, a disorder that has been unfamiliar to most people. Aphasia occurs because of brain damage. This might be from a stroke, a tumor, a head injury, a brain infection, or a progressive neurologic disease like Alzheimer's. The part of the brain that is damaged determines the type of aphasia that develops. There are many kinds, and they fall into three main categories. The first kind is called anomic aphasia, or anomia. This comes from damage anywhere in the left hemisphere of the brain and causes word-finding problems, particularly difficulty coming up with nouns. This is different from the trouble many seniors have remembering the names of people or places. We don't consider that abnormal unless the word you can't find is the name of your child or your spouse. Anomia is trouble coming up with ordinary words like tree, sidewalk, table, desk, pencil, cup, or asparagus, says Dr. Andrew Budson, a neurologist and chief of cognitive and behavioral neurology at the VA Boston Healthcare System. The next kind of aphasia is Broca's aphasia. This comes from damage to Broca's area, which is in the frontal lobe of the brain. Broca's area is in charge of arranging words and sentences and translating meaning into sounds. People with Broca's aphasia have a hard time producing speech. They know what they want to say, but it's difficult to get the words out, Dr. Budson says. They understand what you're saying to them. Another kind of aphasia is Wernicke's aphasia. This comes from damage to Wernicke's area, located in the temporal lobe of the brain. This area connects information about word meanings with the speech output centers in Broca's area. People with Wernicke's aphasia have difficulty making sense of what other people are saying. They can speak fluently, but the words that come out are nonsense. Aphasia can be mild or severe. In many cases, intelligence remains intact despite aphasia. People with Broca's aphasia understand entirely who they are, where they are, who the people around them are, what day it is, how to balance a checkbook, but may be unable to speak their thoughts. If you or a loved one is having difficulty with word finding, speaking, or understanding speech, talk to your primary care doctor, and you may be referred to a specialist, a neurologist or neuropsychologist for further evaluation. Knowing the type of aphasia is important for people to adapt and to make sure someone gets the right rehabilitation or treatment, Dr. Budson says. Speech therapy helps people with aphasia learn to communicate. It's mostly for people with mild to moderate Broca's aphasia or anomia, since it's difficult for people with Wernicke's aphasia to understand instructions. Speech therapy may include asking yes or no questions. Since people with Broca's aphasia or anomia can understand you, asking them questions to which they can nod or shake their head often works when they can't say the words yes or no. Using pictures. People who use booklets or an app filled with images. For example, there might be pictures of different foods. If you ask them what they want for dinner, they can point to the options they want. Another possibility is to use melodies. Sometimes people with Broca's aphasia can sing words they can't say. Singing tricks the brain into unlocking words stored in undamaged areas. This means they can try singing their answers to a familiar tune, like Happy Birthday to You. For example, if you ask a person what they want for dinner, they would sing, I'd like chicken with rice. I'd like chicken with rice, and so on. It's a way that some people have been able to overcome aphasia, Dr. Budson says. Another option is to use word cousins. When a word escapes people with anomia, they're taught to think of related words. If a person wants a cup, you ask them to think of things like a cup, maybe a glass, a jar, or a mug. That activates the brain network with all the words related to cup, and eventually a cup will pop into the person's mind. That same technique can be useful when anyone has difficulty finding the right word or name. Can you recover from aphasia? If the cause of the aphasia improves, so may the aphasia. But many people will continue to live with some level of aphasia, especially if the cause is a progressive brain disease like Alzheimer's. The important thing is that you and your family or caregivers learn to work with your limitations. Aphasia can be very isolating. Having some way to communicate helps people with aphasia to be engaged in life and feel connected to others. Everybody needs that. Now, continue with the Harvard Health Letter of June 2022. We're going to go over Ask the Doctor with Dr. Anthony Komaroff, MD. Does alcohol harm the heart? You often say that an alcoholic drink per day improves heart health. But I heard a recent study found that any amount of alcohol is harmful for the heart. What's the truth? Every one of us wants advice that's simple and true, but few important things are simple, and what we think is true can change with more information. My colleagues at the Harvard School of Public Health put it succinctly: alcohol is a tonic and a poison. Whether alcohol is a tonic or a poison for you depends on your current state of health, including diseases that run in your family, your habits, like your diet, exercise, and smoking, and how much alcohol you drink. As for the recent study that concluded that there was no amount of alcohol per day that was healthy, I think the study was flawed and actually showed health benefits from 3 to 6 drinks per week. In contrast to that single study, more than 100 large studies have found that people who have one drink per day have lower risk of cardiovascular disease. One drink is a 12-ounce beer, 5 ounces of wine, or 1.5 ounces of hard liquor. And while it's healthy for most people to have one drink on each day of the week, 7 drinks all on Saturday night is not healthy. Many studies find that people who have more than 3 drinks per day are at much greater risk of damage to the heart, liver, and brain, and of dying in an automobile accident or from violence. Any amount of alcohol may increase the risk of breast cancer in women. Hearing that, a woman might be inclined to say, "Well then, I'm going to avoid alcohol." But it's not that simple. A 60-year-old woman is 10 times more likely to die from heart disease than from breast cancer. While a drink a day may slightly increase a woman's risk of breast cancer, it reduces a woman's much greater risk of heart disease. It's all about achieving a healthy balance of risk. For you, if breast cancer is common in your family, it may well be best to avoid having a drink a day. But if heart disease runs in your family, a drink a day may make sense for you. If you are physically active, don't smoke, eat a healthy diet, are not overweight, and have no family history of heart disease, there's little added benefit from drinking alcohol. And if you don't usually drink, there's certainly no need to start. There are better ways to achieve heart health. Now we're going to briefly go over some news briefs from the Harvard Health Letter. The first news brief is entitled, "Time-Restricted Eating Doesn't Appear to Boost Weight Loss." There are a number of reliable ways to lose weight. A relatively new approach is time-restricted eating or intermittent fasting. Limiting meals to a certain window of time each day was put on test in a small randomized trial. Findings were published in the April 21, 2022 issue of the New England Journal of Medicine. Researchers in China randomly apportioned 139 obese men and women into two groups. One group was told to limit daily calorie intake, 1,500 to 1,800 calories for men, 1,200 to 1,500 calories for women. The other group was told to follow the same calorie limits, but to eat only between 8 a.m. and 4 p.m. To make sure no one cheated, participants had to photograph every morsel they ate and keep food diaries. After 1 year, people in both groups showed about the same amount of weight loss, 14 to 18 pounds, and the same changes in body fat, blood pressure, cholesterol, and blood sugar. The changes came from calorie restriction, not time restriction. Critics of the study say it could be that the eating window, 8 hours, simply wasn't short enough to make a difference for the time-restricted group. A 6-hour window might have different results. Time-restricted eating continues to be debated, but there's no question that calorie reduction and exercise are effective for weight loss. We have lots of evidence that they work. Well, it looks like we ran out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen next time. I sure hope you enjoyed it. I'm Dr. Scott Youngkin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Health Issues is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thanks for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. Thank you.